You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The NBA playoffs are just days away, and to help get you prepared with everything you need to know, the Locked On Podcast Network is hosting crossovers of every matchup in the Orlando bubble. I'm David Romillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, and with me today is the incomparable Tony East, the host of Locked On Pacers. Tony, first and foremost, how are you doing, sir?
I'm great. I'm excited that the bubble is working and we can actually talk about the playoffs, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be a series that the Pacers and Heat have been owning in on for a long time. So I'm really excited to finally talk about it and see it happen.
Yeah, you know, it seems like everything was kind of steering towards this direction anyway. Obviously, the Heat have played Indiana twice over the last week. They were robbed of a couple regular season meetings before the hiatus took place. And then now they were able to match up in the Orlando bubble. I don't know that there's been anything that we could take from either of those games that would apply towards the playoffs other than perhaps a lesser performance from TJ Warren. But I did want to kind of start off with something I just saw regarding ESPN. I don't know how you feel about it. Not a single ESPN writer predicted Indiana to have a chance in this series.
I saw that. That doesn't super surprise me. We'll do our predictions later, and I think we're both going to pick the same team. But that doesn't super surprise me, right? The Pacers' best player is going to miss almost certainly the entire series. And if we want, we can start there because McMillan talked about that today. But that you know, I think it'll go more than five, most likely. But I don't think the Pacers have a super awesome chance at winning the series. But that's burying the lead completely. I think we're going in the wrong direction.
So they face off for the first time on Tuesday at 4 p.m. What are you looking forward to the most out of that potential game?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the teams, to me, play differently than the regular season. So Nate McMillan was talking about playoff preparation and the Heat sort of earlier this week or a couple days ago as part of, you know, every question's about the playoffs now and these media availabilities.
Sure.
And when he was talking about preparations, he said that they've been, you know, preparing for Boston, Miami, and Philly, basically pre-restart even they were doing playoff prep. But as soon as they beat the Sixers, they really got going on the Heat because they thought this was going to be it. So they've been really honed in on the Heat for a while, what they can do to be better, how could they can, you know, overcome what's been plaguing them in the regular season. And it's going to be a lot of changes, but a guy I'm looking at in this first game that'll be really interesting to see how, you know, what these adjustments are, how this game can get going is a guy you and I talked about a little bit before off air, TJ Warren. He talked today to media. He scored 10.3 points per game against the Heat this regular season on 35%, 36% shooting. Not the best player. So in the playoffs, I think when you talk about preparations and adjustments, you think of two things, but the game really slows down is one of them. And how do you overcome defensive mismatches too? But I think Warren being the best ISO scorer in a slowdown game is really important for the Pacers. So to me, one of the adjustments I'm looking for from the Pacers is how can they get him going, right? The Heat are really good at throwing two guys at him right when he catches the ball or, you know, being in the right positions when he actually is open for a few seconds to neutralize any chance of a shot he has. I'm really interested in how the Pacers can make their best scorers get good chances to score because the Heat, in the three meaningful games, the Heat won all three because they were able to play really good defense against the Pacers this year.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that we had really focused on prior to last week's rematch, if you will, is the TJ Warren versus Jimmy Butler matchup. And that kind of, to me, it wound up feeling very anticlimactic because while
I'm actually Butler, glad
I'm sorry?
I'm actually kind of glad it turned out to be nothing. So we could talk more about the game, you know?
Sure. No, and even today in his availability, Jimmy Butler kind of downplayed the whole thing. He said that's in the past now. It's not about Warren, et cetera. Right. As you expected that he would. But even in the game itself, like Butler matched up against Warren to some degree, but it was kind of overblown. He didn't really spend the whole game on him. And that's part of one of Miami's strengths as far as what they're able to do to limit Warren is that they have multiple defenders that can make things difficult for him. If he's somehow able to elude, you know, a Butler on the perimeter, he has to match up with either Crowder or Bam or Iguodala on some occasions. And so I think that's what kept him from getting those easy looks that he normally have been able to knock down. However, I did notice that he had a number of open looks, particularly from the perimeter. He just didn't knock those down. I'm a little curious as to what he might have said about that post game because I didn't see any comments from him about his lack of effectiveness against Miami last Monday.
Well, outside of what he said, I will go with my own comments first because I'm a genius, but no, I'm just kidding. But anyway, it felt like in the first quarter when, you know, the story was still kind of Warren V. Butler-ish. And he was forcing a few shots. You know, I don't know if you felt that from the Heat sent too, but you know, Warren had a couple possessions where he would come in for very contested layups while being guarded by a guy and help defense was coming. You know, stuff like that that is atypical of him. Even in the bubble when he's been cooking, he has not really been forcing it, which is what's made it so impressive, is it's all flow for him. And that calmed down in the second quarter, and they made a comeback, and then the Heat just destroyed them in the second half. But you know, he really just said that he couldn't get anything going. Their defense is really good. McMillan has mentioned multiple times, you know, about how good the Heat's defense is, and mentions a lot something that I always thought would be a matchup difficulty for the Pacers against the Celtics, but it's now going to be one against the Heat because of their trade, is they have a lot of like-size guys, right?
Right.
Crowder, Iguodala, Butler, all the wings are, you know, you can switch everything. So it's really hard to find a clean, easy matchup when they have certain guys in there. You know, there's certain guys you can target, but it's tough to get those situations. And, you know, McMillan talks about how good the Heat are at challenging passes, challenging dribblies. Challenging dribblers, they're good at one-on-one defense. So it's really hard to create those situations that are advantageous, and Warren just couldn't get any of them.
Do you get a sense that Warren was trying to do a lot, and maybe he's never really had this kind of pressure to be the guy, the man, the top scorer? And while he had a pretty good couple of years in Phoenix, they were really, you know, they didn't really accomplish much. And now that he's all of a sudden guiding and leading this playoff team, maybe he's buckling under the challenge of trying to be the top scorer?
I don't know about that, because this was the only game where they were totally stymied on offense the whole time in the bubble. You know, like the against the Suns, he was struggling because Mikal Bridges is Mikal Bridges. But for 75% of that game, they found ways to score other ways. And this game, he just didn't – between external factors and the Heat's defense being really good, he just didn't have it. And then, you know, they kind of realized that because the Sixers lost that same day that they had their seed locked up, so they just sat him out the rest of the time, right? We didn't get to see how he could bounce back from that. So I don't think it's more of a being the guy thing, right? They have had good Vic performances, really good Brogdon performances. He's a guy I want to talk about with you heavily on this preview. So I think they can figure out how to get points from other guys. It's just he's been so good that they haven't needed to.
So what's the key to unlocking Warren, aside from just getting him more open looks? Is it for a guy like Oladipo or Brogdon to have a really huge scoring performance where he kind of takes on more of the defense, and then that maybe that allows Warren some more opportunities to get those easier looks?
I would like some screens away from the play. You know, since the Heat are so switchy anyway, maybe try to get him the advantage before he even gets the ball instead of making him have to do it himself. You know, there were a few curls that he was open on. Caitlin Cooper, again, we brought her up last time we talked, but she wrote a good piece about how he was open sometimes, didn't get the ball, right? They're just too slow in thinking about those decisions sometimes. Just, you know, maybe just get him in the flow like they have been. It's hard to explain how you can see the difference, but you could tell earlier there was a concerted effort to try to get him involved, and that's just not what was working. Just run the offense, and he'll get his buckets. He's a scorer. It's what he does.
Is it a lack of passing or just a lack of IQ as far as being able to find him? Or is he just not as good at off-ball cutting as you might want for your top scorer?
Neither. I can't explain it. It was just a different quarter, and it took him out of the game. I think that first quarter really just took him out of the game because Brogdon really not forcing it. Brogdon's a smart guy, but he was a little slow in his decisions that game and just couldn't get him the ball in advantageous positions as often as he has been able to for the rest of the bubble. So, you know, I think Brogdon's going to be better in the playoffs. He has been every year of his career. If he can be quicker with those snap decisions or able to get a half step on a defender to draw help and get Warren the ball, I think that'll help a lot too.
Yeah, the Brogdon matchup I have mentioned last week was one that particularly concerned me, and it still does. So TJ Warren's obviously going to be needing support, and somebody who needs support are the restaurants in your community, and there are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. So support your favorite restaurants on DoorDash, because ordering is easy. Just open the DoorDash app, you choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with a new contactless delivery drop-off setting. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. It's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. It's the app that brings you your food, the food that you're craving right now, right to your door. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash.
Thank you.
talking again about the upcoming playoff series between Miami and Indiana. A tough one to really gauge based on, well, the lack of personnel, at least on Indiana's side. You're missing your bench scorer in Jeremy Lamb. You're missing your top all-star, your best player, arguably, in Domantas Sabonis. But it still should be a much more challenging series. I don't think Indiana's getting the kind of credit that they deserve. I mean, they're the fourth seed. Whether that means anything or not, I guess that's up to your own respective opinions. But it's they've had a very good regular season, as you expected them to do. And Mike McMillan's a hell of a good coach. It's going to be a lot more interesting and challenging for Miami than a lot of people seem to think.
So there's a matchup I want to talk about that I think favored Miami heavily in the game on Monday. And I know that we can't take a ton from that game, but it was the only game we got this whole season that, you know, the teams were both trying, had a lot of starters playing, and Sabonis didn't play. I think you can see where I'm going with this. But Bam looked fantastic, and Miles Turner did not. And I want to hear what you think about how that matchup went for Bam, and if you felt like he kind of got lucky, or if Bam is really just, if he can continue that level of high success against Turner.
I think so. I think one of the things that we've seen over the last couple of days as their playoff coverage ramps up is that there might be some feelings of, if not direct animosity there, a little tension based on the fact that Turner was chosen for the USA basketball team last year in the World Cup over Bam, that he was cut. And while I didn't have a problem with that decision, obviously having not covered the USA basketball tournament and everything else that involved, I thought Bam was too raw at that point in time, but I guess Adebayo took it personally. And a lot of that might have been what's fueled his first All-Star season this past year. So the Raptors.
That is interesting.
I'm sorry.
I did not know that. I had not heard.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. Apparently. Yeah. Apparently Bam, not only does he hold a grudge against Greg Popovich of all people, but Miles Turner and a couple
Brooke,
others.
I guess. Brooke Lopez on that team too. Is that another guy that second round? There we go.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole other story. I think Bam has been able to do this pretty consistently. I don't think this was just a one-off performance. He was able to stay on Turner pretty consistently, and I still think that would be the case in a playoff series. He's not at 100%. I know the COVID-19 diagnosis came from out of nowhere, but he still has admitted that he does not have a full wind here, that he's taken a little bit longer to recover than he has expected to. And although he's had some really bright moments defensively, I think offensively it's still been a little bit of a struggle for him. Now, he did have one good game during the restart where he got to the line a number of times when Jimmy was out. Aside from that, he's been pretty shaky on offense. And maybe that's not where you necessarily need from him, considering you have so many other good shooters on this team and guys that can create their own offense. Bam is not that guy. He's a great passer and still is able to facilitate a great deal. But as far as his one-on-one matchup with Turner, I'd still expect that to be in Miami's favor just because of Bam's versatility and the fact that he has the kind of strength to match up with bigs and even more flexible guys like more mobile bigs like Turner. So I still think that would be definitely skewed towards Miami's favor.
No matter how often I watch Miami, every time I really dig into a game or rewatch a game, I always, like you just mentioned, his versatility. I'm always impressed at, like, this dude's the point guard. Like, one of every five possessions, he's dribbling up the floor. It's like, that just takes Miles' advantage away so much for a few seconds where, you know, he's really good at defending pick and rolls and being in the right spot on handoffs and not getting caught in no man's land. And all of a sudden, it's like, wait, he's defending the point guard? You know, how do the Pacers counteract that? I think that's going to be really interesting because the Heat gets so much going from that. They can do a quick handoff with Robinson, do some clever off-ball stuff, right? It was just so clever and effective. The only time I thought Miles really on offense was clicking, early third quarter, they had a lot of offensive sets that ended with the Turner shot, and a lot of them were open, but he missed them all, right? If he can't within the flow of the offense make Bam move and contest his even his open ones, then he's just going to get destroyed in this matchup. And the Heat, you know, for all their strengths this year, really good shooting team, awesome offensive team, nearly top 10 defensive team, right? The glass is probably their biggest weakness, right, including Bam's struggles. Turner's not good on the glass, and he wasn't against the Heat. I mean, the Heat had 13 offensive rebounds. I know Bam only had two in that game, but I think Turner has to be better in that matchup, both on the glass, you know, containing him as a ball handler and trying to limit his versatility, as well as making him work more on D than he did. Like, that was an alarmingly good performance from Bam, and that, oh, man, like, if this level of dominance comes from Bam in the postseason, the Pacers are going to have to do better in other places to make up for it. And they're already getting killed, so they need a lot of work there.
Yeah, looking back at it and thinking about it right now, a lot of Indiana's possessions seemed like there was just a lot of lack of movement, maybe a stagnant.
Tons.
What was the key? What was the reason for it? Was it just Miami's defense being able to shed, you know, stay on guys particularly close, or just the lack of passing, like I hinted at before?
That was less movement than normal for the Pacers, but I think that they just in general have a low movement offense. And if you're the Heat, right, you've one of the higher movement offenses in the league. I think the contrast makes it stand out so much more. When you see the Heat weave and bob and screen and cut, and all of a sudden, you know, someone's open here and there, and you're like, whoa, where'd that guy come from? You know, you have to really communicate and own in on defense. Whereas the Pacers, they come down and they run, you know, whatever their action is at first. And if that's not there, they'll run like one pick and roll with a side, something or another. But if that's not there, it's nice. So it's like, it's such a stark contrast. But however, no, normally it's fine. The Pacers offense isn't good. It's about average every year, but in this game, you know, they scored 92. Like, it was way worse than normal. There was a lot less off-ball movement, a lot more, you know, forcing it with this guy or that guy in ISO, which I thought was kind of strange, and I wasn't sure why. You know, maybe you can say, oh, they're just holding stuff for the playoffs, but you know, neither coach said they were doing that when I looked back on quotes. I mean, maybe that's what happened anyway, but so that's an option. And in the second quarter, the Pacers' offense was moving a lot. The second unit pushed it. T.J. McConnell's talked about how he thinks it's really important for the Pacers to push. The Heat's transition defense is not as good as their half-court defense, so really blitzing them in those situations could be huge, and he was the reason they were tied at halftime.
Yes.
I'm reading way too much into that one game, but still.
Is it? Because it feels like McConnell's just one of those guys. I know, look, Heat fans tend to have a term that they use called the hashtag random scrub heat killer, or RSHK. There's always seems to be in Heat fandom the perception that there's going to be this one guy who's always going to step up and have a huge kind of game. Like it was Javon Carter, I think, against when Phoenix played Miami the other day. He wound up having a huge game, and he got the scrub heat killer terminology there. But it seems like McConnell has always had some kind of ability to go against Miami and have a strong impact there. And a part of that is because of what you just mentioned, the fact that he's able to get out and transition quickly. He's a smaller point guard, so he's able to get pretty open looks at the rim too.
What I'm hearing is I need to add the Heat to the massive list of teams that think McConnell only kills their team. I heard this about the Lakers this year. I heard this about the Mavs this year. I think I heard this about the Timberwolves this year. The Heat, like every team is like, oh, McConnell kills our team. It's like, no. This is just kind of how he plays. And if you don't have a quick guard to keep up with him with your second unit, like, it's just going to happen. And I think it's funny that you say that, but maybe it's perception or, you know, his general skill set compared to other NBA players. But yeah, every team thinks McConnell like surprisingly kills their team, but it's the way he plays. Yeah. And he was really good, I thought, last Monday. Yes. Unlike many other Pacers, I thought he was really good. And I've taken a lot of weight to his quote since then. And he's had playoff success. The Sixers, not awesome playoff success, but, you know, he's won a few series. He's been an important part of some games. I put a lot of weight into the stuff he says. And he is personally stressing the importance of getting out and running, getting those stops, right, which makes that offensive rebounding battle even more important. If the Heat can continue to get 13 offensive rebounds and the Pacers get 6, they can't get out and run as much, and they're giving up more transition where, you know, McConnell and the Pacers' strength can be pushing and not letting the Heat get in the half court. So, you know, he was really into that, and I think that second unit can be really important. But, yeah, I took a lot of weight into those quotes.
So you seem to think that the rebounding battle is going to be a huge factor for Miami. I don't know. I think that they've
– Aren't they bad at rebounding? Aren't the Heat actively bad at rebounding?
Yes, they de-emphasize their rebound as much as possible. It's odd to think of it that way, but that's just the reality, is that they don't really put a lot of stock in it, which is why they have a smaller center. As active as Bam is, they don't really focus too much on the rebounding edge. Myers Leonard does provide a little bit of that when he's in the lineup, obviously being a big body, but he has not played a lot. He played some against Indiana in that second game that didn't really mean much, but other than that, he just has not gotten a lot of playing time, and I wouldn't anticipate that to change during the course of the playoffs. So it just seems like he's fallen out of the rotation completely. And the rebounding, again, just it's not going to matter to them, and they're just going to try and do what they do well, which is shoot the ball. That's their main focus. They're going to put up a lot of shots, particularly from the perimeter, and they live and die by the three. I was glad to see Caitlin Cooper point that out, because it's something that I've been kind of maintaining pretty steadily over the last few weeks, is that it's a dangerous sword to live by, because it's a double-edged one. But it's something we can talk about that in the next segment. But I know you wanted to bring up something to our listeners about Built Bar.
I did want to bring up something to our listeners about Built Bar because they tell us to say that it's the best protein bar ever, but I can actually tell you that it's the best tasting protein bar ever because I have had them and they are delicious. And I would highly recommend Built Bar to anyone. They have 18 flavors now. They added 6 new ones to their old 12 original delicious flavors. They now have caramel brownie, cookies and cream, Terry Barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp added to their already, again, 12 awesome flavors. They're 100% covered in chocolate, but the inside is more based on the texture of the actual flavor that you're eating. So they're soft and easy to chew while being delicious. They're great for the health conscious guy. They're good for losing weight, you know, gaining muscle, and they're delicious. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Great for any kind of keto diet you're doing. And best of all, if you use the code LOCKEDON at checkout, you can get $10 off your next order at BuiltBar.com. And if you go quickly while supplies last, you get a free cooler with your purchase. So go to BuiltBar.com, try them out, use that code LOCKEDON, all one word, at checkout. You'll get $10 off your order. And if you're quick enough, a free cooler. So go check them out.
Subscribe to both Locked On Heat and Locked On Pacers wherever you download podcasts, just so you can get your favorite episode delivered to you every day. You just get in your car and you say Locked On Pacers and you'll have the today's episode sent to you. You want to stay up to date during the playoffs, so make sure you download, leave a review, subscribe, and thank you so much for listening. We're talking about the upcoming matchup between the Heat and Pacers. Should be a good one. The rebounding edge, one that I think skews in favor of Indiana, honestly, because of Miami's lack of emphasis on that edge. I know it's something of a concern for you, but what else are you kind of expecting as far as Indiana is concerned that might give them a bigger edge in the playoffs? Because I think you look at Miami's personnel and the fact that they're somewhat healthy moving forward with the playoffs, and Indiana obviously is not. So if there's something that Indiana could unlock that would help them get a couple of games of, and maybe not the series altogether, what do you think that could be?
I think unlocking Brogdon is going to be big time. I'm glad we can finally talk about him. So something I asked Brogdon about straight up, and this is kind of a loaded question, but I said, like, look, every year you are better in the playoffs than in the regular season, right? It's a thing that you were really good against the Celtics better than, or not the Celtics, but, you know, really good against the Raptors, better than Chris Middleton in the past. Chris Middleton's awesome against the Celtics as well. I had to walk back to the Celtics there. But he's done amazing in the playoffs every year. So I was like, why are you so good in the playoffs? And he just said, like, I really focused and I have to take my game to a higher level. So I do. And I really want to make sure that via osmosis gets to my teammates, right? He wants his excellence to go up. And I think that's important for two reasons. Is one, he's kind of a difficult matchup for the Heat, right? I don't know if Kendrick Nunn's going to start between his injury. I'd imagine it's going to be Hero in his place. But, you know, Nunn's,
I think it's Goran, honestly.
Oh, well, that is also a size advantage for the Pacers. So
absolutely.
You know, if Brogdon really can elevate his game, because the big thing before he came to Indiana was hammering, and rightly so, this is awesome, 50-40-90. That's insane, right? Well, in Indiana, that has not been the case. It's 44-33-90, and understood, his shots are much harder. He shoots off the dribble. He has to create them himself. Giannis isn't his teammate, right? His percentages are going to drop. I don't expect him to get 50-40-90 here. I do expect his percentages to be more, you know, closer to what they have been than what they are, though. You know, those are all three, I guess, free throws withheld, but career low number shooting-wise. So if he can really elevate his game and maybe get closer to like a 46-38 kind of guy, really can be like the stretchy third option, but also an effective driving first option, I think that would be huge for the Pacers, because through December-ish, I mean, when they announced all-star ballots, I thought he was going to be the only Pacer that gets one and not Sabonis. And then he went through a ring of fire with injuries and
Never
really was as good this year. But he can be really good at his peak. He gets better in the playoffs every year. And he's sort of a mismatch nightmare for the Heat. So I think he is really important for the series.
Yeah, I think that Kendrick has played himself out of the rotation. He was...
Wow, that bad, huh?
Well, it's just...
That far?
There's no chance for him to get any kind of significant playing time with his offense struggling like it has been. And that's the key issue with him, is that there's nothing else that he does particularly well. As much as he's kind of caught fire this season, his rookie season, and that he's been able to make a strong impression on offense. He's been almost as bad on defense, and he does not create plays for others. So wow. He's not the shot creator that Goran Dragic is. He's not the shot maker that Tyler Hero is. So there's no real place for him. And, you know, if he's not going to defend at a high wall, look, he is an earnest defender in that he tries hard at times, but he also goes under screens a ton, and he just can't stay with a ball handler. And if that's the case, he's going to get torched. He's undersized in comparison to Brogdon, as you pointed out. And so that's a huge concern. And I don't see him getting any kind of playing time significant. I know he had left the campus.
We'll get back to Brogdon, but you think it's going to be Goran, Robinson, Bam, Jay, Jimmy starting, and then
yes.
Hero, Olynyk, Iguodala, and maybe Derek Jones as the nine, if
yes.
they go nine?
Okay. Yes. Yeah, okay. That would be my guess. I think Hero has shown some flashes as the lead point guard and a guy who can create plays for others, and obviously he's able to get his shot off pretty much over anybody because he's yep. so creative.
He was great against the Thunder. I caught him in that game.
Yeah, and I think that's where he's trending. Eventually he could become a starting point guard, but I think Spoelstra just has so much faith and trust in Goran Dragic as a veteran, and that might be a limitation of Spo. Now, Spo has, you know, to his credit, really thrown me off considerably. Again, benching Myers Leonard was huge. Starting Jay Crowder was another big step there. The fact that he's been as dismissive as he has been of Kendrick Nunn, who I feel has been a problem defensively all season long, all these things kind of have really changed my perspective of him, because maybe it's the compressed nature of the bubble. Maybe it's the fact that he recognizes that he has to win now in order to preserve as much as possible Jimmy Butler's, you know, career here in Miami. I don't know what it is, but either way, there seems to be a much more intense approach from Spoelstra and a willingness to make changes that he's been criticized for in the past. And so I wouldn't be surprised that if Goran does start and he's not effective, that he would pull him just as quickly. So I think we'll see Goran starting. But again, if he's torched or just not as effective later on, then I would see him getting benched for Hero.
That all makes sense to me. It's just wild to me to see Nunn play 67 games, start all 67, and then not even be in the rotation the postseason.
But Myers, you know what?
If he's not good enough, he's not good enough, right? It's that simple when it comes to the playoffs. That does hurt Brogdon a little bit, because in my head always, as good as Nunn's been scoring this year, right, he's going to finish third in Rookie of the Year. He was a really good player. I don't want to belittle what he did this year, but, like, Brogdon can score on him, like, very easily and create using a post-up with him. And, you know, he's got the IQ advantage, so you can slow him down a little bit. Dragic, however, you know, a shiftier. I think we saw some great passes from Dragic last Monday.
Yes.
Obviously a good player. He's been an all-star in the league. Two and a half years ago. Time is a weird construct now that it's August NBA basketball. But anyway, not that long ago, Dragic was an all-star. It's still a good player. So that makes that matchup less of an advantage. But I still like Brogdon there as a big one. And I want to flip that Brogdon question to you now, where you said, you know, where can the Pacers kind of get some edge, get something up that they haven't had against the Heat this year? What's the Heat's thing? You know, we talked about Bam. Maybe it's him. I mean, Jimmy Butler always has been good in the playoffs his whole career. Where are they going to get more contributions than perhaps they've seen in the past that makes them a harder out?
Honestly, I think it's Hero. I think what we know from Duncan Robinson, and he's shown flashes of, I think he did against Indiana as well, was that he was able to be a little bit more effective off ball, and he has so much gravity. Something I actually managed to talk to him about yesterday. I had him on the show yesterday and talked to him from within the bubble. So,
Robinson on Locked On Heat. Locked On Pacers listeners, go check that out.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, the show has not come out yet. It's going to be out actually the day of our game one. No, but that's okay. I wanted to hype it up because I'm glad that he spent half an hour talking to me about everything that's going on in the bubble and the matchup against the Pacers. And one of the things that he's been very effective at finding cutters, the relationship with Bam obviously has been touted lately, and for good reason. So I think we already know what we can get out of Robinson, but if there's a quote-unquote X factor here, it's Hero. You know, just because he's a rookie, there's always going to be questions about whether or not he's going to be stepping up at this heightened stage and things of that sort. If you take out Robinson, I think there's still enough that he can do as far as being a playmaker. And again, that gravity on the offensive end, as far as, you know, multiple defenders will have to focus on him and try to limit what he can do. And he can find guys like Bam or Jimmy or Crowder cutting to the hoop. I still think that's going to be an edge for Miami if he's not able to shoot it particularly well, which we have not seen him do pretty frequently. He's been such a good shooter all season long. But as far as Hero is concerned, that's to me the biggest X factor, is that he's got to come off the bench now. He's got to lead that second unit. He's got to be the guy who can make shots, who can find others, get everybody engaged somehow. And I like the synergy between him and Andre Iguodala. Just, it seems very complimentary. Obviously, you've got this young rookie with all this offensive talent. You've got the older veteran that's very savvy. And while he doesn't have much of a statistical production, he seems to always know exactly what to do and make the right play when it's necessary. So I like that kind of edge. Hero can get to the line too. He's good at drawing contact. He's been very impactful.
Hasn't missed a free throw yet in the bubble either.
Right. He's so effective. And I think that that's a huge thing for Miami, is that they're able to get some kind of solid performances from him where he's making his shots. If he can chip in 15 to 19 points off the bench, that would be such a huge factor, because Olynyk has been really good, but unfortunately I talked him up and then he starts showing the same kind of problems that he has all career long, which is problems with consistency. He just hasn't been able to maintain it and sustain it for a prolonged period of time. And so you never know what you're going to get from Olynyk. It could be an 18-point outing where he's making passes and getting to the rim with ease, or you could have him out there where he's just not doing much and he's getting roasted defensively. And so you wonder whether or not he's going to be as impactful. But the hero to me is a guy who can really make or break this team because of that second unit, because you never know what's going to happen with the starters. They're prone to injury, being Miami. So if they have a good chance, it's going to be that second unit being able to, you know, keep leads or build on them somehow, and that's going to be mostly on Hero to do.
Kelly Olynyk did that thing on Monday where you fake shot fake three and then like hitch lean in to, if you're defending.
Yeah.
You know, I hate that. God, I hate that move so much, and it didn't work. So now I demand he shoots every three like that for the entirety of this. Hero though, ridiculous bubble performances from him as well. 17-4 on 50-38-100. I mean, so efficient scoring. And like you mentioned, the playmaking, 4 assists. Like, that's really good rookie numbers. And, you know, I think I talked to you about this last Monday. The Pacers' second unit's been really big for them, and they finally are getting the shooting back from McDermott and Justin Holiday to make that unit good again. But without Sabonis, it's not as good as it was during the regular season. If they not only don't have an advantage, but Hero can be good enough that the Pacers have a disadvantage on the bench, I mean, that's just huge. The Pacers are going to have a ton of trouble, you know, getting in a lead or holding a lead if their second unit, where they normally do so well, can't keep up or get ahead.
So I think, you know, we'll obviously be talking pretty regularly during the matchup for as long as it lasts, but this is part of our job, is to make predictions. I don't know how you feel about them. I tend not to make them too often. I know a lot of my listeners.
They're not my favorite thing.
Yes. You don't like getting burned and making something, make a stupid prediction. But at the same time, I also, you never know what can happen. Like, a playoff series can change. You never know who's going to have a breakout performance or somebody gets hurt. And there's always
It's less about being right or wrong. It's just like, who cares? Like, is someone walking around like, oh, well, Tony said this, so I picked this. Like, you know, who cares?
No, I mean, look, it's funny how, you know, casual fans and even obviously very intense following fans, like, they love the prediction nature of it. It's like, oh, that fuels them. It's almost like the NBA players themselves. They use those kind of perceived slights.
I get it when you're a player. I guess.
Yeah.
So you want to go first? You want me to go first?
You know, I'll go ahead and say it.
You're the underdog. You have to go first. You're the 5 seed. I'm kidding.
That's right. No, absolutely. I think the health obviously is a huge factor in Miami's favor. Jimmy set out a bunch of games so that he could specifically gear up for this moment. And I think that the theme that everybody was talking up is how he's so consistent in the playoffs, and he's always been so good in these clutch situations, always finds a way to get even better. And that's saying something considering how good he's been this season. He slows the game down. He still gets to the free throw line a lot. You love that you have that kind of superstar on this team, and it's just something that Indiana does not have at this point in time. It could be Warren. It can't be Sabonis because he's out, and it just doesn't seem likely that Oladipo is going to have that kind of huge breakout, or that Brogdon is going to have that kind of huge game either. So that's an edge that goes in Miami's favor. I just like the way that they're coached, the fact that they've all pretty consistently said that they are looking to win a title here. This isn't just about getting deep in the playoffs or being able to knock off a Pacers team. This is about going as deep as you can to win a ring, and that's the ultimate goal here. I like that attitude and the personnel. I've got to go Heat in 6.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I can't believe we did the whole pod, barely even mentioned Jimmy Butler's name. I was scouring through old quotes for an article, and TJ McConnell talked about how Jimmy Butler just – you know, controls the game, never forces the issue, makes the right play. He's been the anchor for that team, closes out games, defends the best player. He went on and on. I mean, they were teammates in Philly last year, so he's very intimate with him. And he just, you know, he was nothing but great things to say about Jimmy Butler. And I think that is why I will also be picking the Heat in six, because the best player is on the Heat, right? He is good. He has playoff deep runs, not deep runs, but, you know, runs into the playoff experience. He's a star. He controls the game. He's hard to guard. He can shut down any individual guy. Smart guy, fun teammate, the perfect kind of guy for this exact scenario. And I think that's going to make the Heat tough to beat. All season long, I've been trumpeting, I think, the Heat are the best matchup for the Pacers. I still think that, but I said that with the mind of Sabonis is an advantage that, you know, the Heat will not be able to have an easy answer for. Well, they don't have Sabonis anymore, so I think that is gone. And I think that the most likely outcome by quite a bit is the Heat in the 5-6 range.
I brought this up in terms of Miami Heat fandom over the past week, but I'm going to ask you while I have you on the line here. If Indiana's a quick out, if they get swept or they go out in five, does this season still seem like a success given the fact that they were able to go as deep as they are and that they were able to – no, it does not feel like a success?
No. I mean, it's their best regular season win percentage since I think since the Heat Pacers 2014 conference finals year, because then – you know, PG got hurt and then things went downhill. So I think it'd be their best win percentage season since then. They just extend their coach. They get a whole big new roster to completely flame out and not even be competitive. Look, I get the context of Vic not being himself and Sabonis being out in the playoffs, but it would just not sit right, I think, with fans.
Really? Okay. That's interesting, because I would have, even if Miami, the whole season has been such a surprise, I think, although I predicted that they would be, again, predictions, I thought that they would be a very good team. They've exceeded my expectations. I think they've shown everybody around the NBA world that they're a very, very good team. Even if they somehow lost in the series, I still think it would be a successful season just because they're primed for growth in the next couple of years. And that's something that you couldn't have said about last year's team. Like, Miami wasn't even in the playoffs last year. So the fact that they're there and talking about being a title contender, that's not just about having Jimmy on your team, although that's a huge factor. It's about everybody else, all the personnel moves they've made that you hinted at, the midseason acquisitions. It's a win now team. And I think they're poised for some good things. So it's going to be curious. It's going to be interesting. Again, I think that we'll be talking a lot more over the next week or two, depending on how long the series lasts. But please share where people can listen to your great words and find your incredible writing on this, because I know you'll be writing about this for Forbes.com.
Yes, yes. I have a Pacers Heat playoff preview probably out if you're listening right now on Forbes right now. And then Locked On Pacers, that's the ad on Twitter. I'm at TEastNBA. I'll be talking this series for as long as it goes on for. So I'm excited.
And I am DRamil13 on Twitter, or you can find me, as always, at Locked On Heat. If you have any questions, submit them using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And again, we'll have plenty of things to talk about, I'm sure, over the next couple of weeks. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe, everyone.
Back it up, D.